It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 podcast. Mike Ciano along with Corey Stats Schwartz. Coming to you for, maybe the next 45 minutes or so. Why not?
We have maybe 50.
We have till a time undetermined to talk to you and talk to ourselves and listen to ourselves talk. But first, some housekeeping. Don't forget the blog, Fantasy411.
Still makes me laugh.
MLblogs.com. That's Fantasy411.mlblogs.com. The Goose doing a fantastic job maintaining the blog. And, you know, when in season starts, you'll get your two-star pitchers posted there. For those of you in weekly leagues, very helpful tool. Of course, the composites are up. Thank you, Corey Schwartz, once again.
And I was working on that last night, and I hope to have an update in the next couple of days.
Update your composites, please.
Yes,
update
your
composites. Please update your composites.
Yes.
So you have that tool to get ready for your drafts, and we're getting close. The demarcation line to me is St. Patty's Day. I just like to use St. Patty's Day.
Demarcation line? Wow.
Yeah, I'm pulling out stuff from social studies classes left and right lately. So check that out, the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com, on the Twitter machine, at fantasy411. We got at Schwartstops. We got at the Cap23. And what's Fred Zinke's Twitter handle?
It's at Fred Zinke.
At Fred Zinke.
It might be Fred Zinke MLB or something like that.
I'm going to confirm that.
Also this weekend, I will be at the Baseball HQ First Pitch Forum. That will be taking place this Saturday at noon.
That's in New Jersey, right?
Over in New Jersey.
Ew.
A lot of people. As a matter of fact, you know, Baseball HQ does sort of this tour. You know, it's like a concert tour, but talking fantasy baseball.
Without music.
And New York has the biggest lineup of any of the markets.
Well, you're I'm
there. No, not just big in stature, Mike, but big in volume as well. Joe Sheehan will be there. In fact, I'm giving him a ride.
Oh.
Lord Zola will be there. Of course, Ron Chandler, Brett Hershey, and all the guys from Baseball HQ. So go to baseballhq.com and check that out. They are not a formal partner of MLB.com, but you know what? We just like them.
They're friends.
And they do good stuff.
They're friends of the family.
Friends of the 411.
Friends of the 411.
So go to baseballhq.com and look for info on their first pitch forum on Saturday. And if you're listening to this at any point before Saturday, I hope to see you there.
If you're listening to it on Sunday, that's what you get for being slow.
Right. You blew it!
At Fred Zinke MLB. Fred Zinke MLB. Please follow Fred. Please read his work. He's doing fantastic stuff for the site. He's got the hardware to back it up. And we'll get into a couple of his things. Two post stories, whatever you want to call them, I want to discuss. One is who should take number two after Mr. Trout, that Fred wrote about very eloquently the other day. We got Jim Callis, our good friend Jim Callis of the MLB.com pipeline coverage, to write about top 15 fantasy prospects. So younger guys who can make an impact. And I'll give you some names and we'll talk about them in a moment too.
Baby Lindor.
I don't think he was in the top 15. I don't think he was in
I
wrote down the top 10 and tried to remember 11 through 15.
Wow, that's challenging. So, usually it's the other way around.
Yeah. Also, we have some of your tweets to get to, and we'll get them to them in a second. But first, some news and notes, then a thing that Corey was working on with spring training stats, and then all that other stuff. So a couple things. Mike Minor had to get scratched. Left shoulder, I believe.
Sore shoulder. Yep. Mark Bowman, who covers the Braves for MLB.com and has been doing an awesome job of that for as long as I can remember, says they compared test results this year, last year. They don't believe there's any structural damage, but based on the soreness this early, he's almost assured to start on the season on the DL. I like Minor as a buy-low candidate this year. I thought he'd be a good bounce-back guy.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm definitely going to be monitoring this one because part of the reason I liked him is because he never got on track after having off-season surgery last year, and then he had some shoulder soreness. I hope this is not a bigger problem.
Yeah, so proceed with caution, but it really shouldn't be a big investment nonetheless.
Hopefully, it's a minor issue.
Oh, I see what you did there. Ruzny Castillo with the I get it. Ruzny Castillo, I acknowledged it, with the oblique.
Yeah.
So he's going to be down for at least a week, I believe. You know, and this Boston outfield is getting a lot of discussion around it. It clearly has a fantasy impact. We know who the left fielder is. It's Hanley Ramirez, by the way. We're not really too sure what's going to happen with Victorino, Castillo, Mookie Betts. They got the wrench. There's a wrench in the plan with the wrench.
Seriously.
See what I did there? So So, I mean, it's one of those, well, these things tend to figure themselves out. Well, this may be the first part of that.
Absolutely. And look, you know, John Farrell came right out and said, as long as he's healthy, Shane Victorino's my right fielder.
Well, yeah, I mean,
so that makes it a flat-out battle between Betts and Castillo for the center field job. If Pedroia's healthy, he's going to play second base. That leaves that out for Betts.
Right.
You mentioned left field is obviously occupied. Third base is occupied by the Panda.
Yep.
The DH spot is occupied. There's nowhere to hide these guys.
Nope.
If Napoli's healthy, he's going to play. So, you know, they're like a slow pitch softball team right now. They have too many bats.
I was just going to say, they need an extra hitter who plays EH.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, that was me, like, on the MLB.com softball team. Like, I don't need to get sweaty and run around. I just want to hit, you know. But they don't have that luxury. And the funny thing is, if you were to say, all right, give each one of these guys 600 plate appearances, you know, in an imaginary world, you know, if they could play EH, you could make an argument that Mookie Betts would be the most valuable fantasy hitter on the Red Sox. And he's the guy who might end up being the odd man out on opening day. Crazy.
True.
Crazy.
We'll see. I mean, he's handling it well. They all are. I mean, listen, he's also very young, so it's not like there's this veteran, you know, and it is the veteran, the old guy in the Flying Hawaiian, who maybe they're showcasing.
Sure.
But they're paying a lot of money to, nonetheless. And
you know, could Toronto use an outfielder? Could Baltimore use an outfielder?
Sure.
I mean, you know, if it's one of those things where we're not afraid to trade within the division, there's two possible partners right there.
Yep, okay. Victor Martinez thinks he might be ready for opening day with that knee. So that's interesting stuff.
And with the other knee, too.
Josh Harrison, little ankle ouchie. So keep an eye on that as well. All right, so let's talk about the subject of the day, which is, do spring training stats count?
And look, first of all, just for, you know, full disclosure, we've been pretty vocal that they don't count, that you look for health and opportunity because, you know, we were concerned about the sample size issues, the quality of competition issues, all that kind of stuff. Dan Rosenheck, who writes about sports and all kinds of stuff for The Economist, really great writer, really entertaining guy, really a lot of fun to hang out with. He presented a paper up at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference this weekend arguing...
Now, how the hell did you get on that campus?
I snuck in through the back door.
You dressed like the janitor and
snuck
in?
Right, exactly. It's amazing what you do when you put on a suit and act like you belong. But anyway, you know,
That's what I'm doing today for this podcast.
Nice suit.
Well, I'm not wearing a
suit. You're just missing the jacket.
And
the tie. And the vest.
And the class.
And the monocle. And the top hat. Anyway, so Dan presented a paper at Sloan this weekend arguing that spring training stats are predictive. And the reason that we haven't found this up until now is that, simply put, we were looking in the wrong direction. Dan, you know, leveraged, he basically looked at two main platforms that got him from this jumping off point. Number one is a little bit of a common sense thing. When you're doing analysis, what happens more recently matters more than what happened further in the past. So it would stand to reason that something that happens in March is more meaningful than something that happens the previous August or September. So that was one platform. The other one is based on recent research talking about how performance metrics stabilize. How many plate appearances or batter's face do you need for a batter's performance level or a player's performance level to become, quote unquote, real versus just statistical noise? And what Dan, you know, that research has found that rate stats like walks per plate appearances, strikeouts per plate appearances, ground ball rates, those things stabilize very quickly. So Dan's thinking was that even though spring training sample sizes are small, 30, 40, 50 at-bats, 15 innings, whatever it may be, the fact that certain rate stats stabilize faster means those spring training stats are still valid. From a fantasy standpoint, we look at things like, you know, batting average and ERA that take a very long time to stabilize and sometimes don't because of, you know, they're a lot more volatile. So long story short, Dan presented research and found that if you weight the playing time and if you normalize for the competition of play and a whole bunch of other statistical stuff that's for smart people like me, beyond smart people like me, he found that there is some predictive value. So you don't say only, oh, well, this guy hit 400 with 10 homers this spring, I better draft him in the first round. You use that to sort of weight your thinking. So if the guy's projected as a 700 OPS, you might look at his spring performance and bounce him up to a 725 OPS. For hitters, the two things he found that are most predictive are isolated power on contact, which is, you know, basically slugging percentage minus strikeouts, and stolen base rates, because that's more of a team strategic thing as it is a player's speed. So if a team runs a lot during the spring, presumably they're going to run a lot during the season. And if you develop power, then that's more real too. So those are sort of the two big takeaways as it relates to batters. But, you know, 30 minutes after we posted the story on MLB.com talking about Dan's research, Joe Sheehan texted me, and Joe's like us. He's been like, no, that's not true. That's nonsense. Spring training stats don't matter. Joe sent me a big, long text saying, I'm not buying it. Spring stats don't count. And he started making all of his arguments against it. And I said, yeah, but Dan covered that in his research. You know, I saw Dan on Friday, and I said, I'm really excited to see your paper tomorrow and, you know, hear about this. We started talking about it. Later on, he walked me through the presentation slide by slide as I asked questions or whatever. I saw the presentation the next day, and then I talked to him about it at length again afterwards. So I had three different opportunities to poke holes in this thing, and he kept coming up with answers for it. So, like I said, you know, it's out there now for peer review. Smarter people than myself will, you know, really be able to dig into it.
But where can you actually find that presentation?
If you follow Dan on Twitter, he's just Dan Rosenheck, R-O-S-E-N-H-E-C-K. He linked to like a Dropbox where you can download the actual PowerPoint slide. It's very interesting stuff. I wouldn't say I'm convinced, but I'm very, very intrigued. And, you know, look, based on, you know, John DeJuan and Baseball Info Solutions had done some research in the last couple of years saying that, you know, that increases in power and slugging in spring training, you know, with a minimum number of plate appearances and a minimum number of career at-bats, that that one thing might be predictive. And Dan's research supports and expands on that as well. So for the last couple of years, I've looked at spring training power spikes to influence my thinking a little bit. So again, if a guy had a huge power spring, I'd bump him from 15 homers to 17 in my projections, or 18 or something like that. I wouldn't go from 15 to 30, you know, but I would use it to weight the projection a little bit. And I think that's where Dan's research, that was the direction he was pointing.
All right, so there is a story.
That's a long answer for you.
No, it was a great answer, though. I knew I'd just tee you up and let you go. Just roll the ball out.
Now I got
to
rehydrate.
Now you have to rehydrate. That's right. Wet your palate. So Zach Finkelstein wrote a story off of it. It's on the site right now. You can get it in At Bat on the homepage and in the news section. Hopefully they're linking to it in the blog. I would also like to link, I guess we can link to that Dropbox thing in the blog too.
Yeah, and those of us who follow me on Twitter, I tweeted it yesterday, Fantasy 411 account retweeted me.
Okay, good.
So it shouldn't take a ton of homework to find it.
Fantastic. And also Paul Casella took a shot at it on Sports on Earth, our sister site here at MLB.com, and talked about some guys specifically who had, I think he was talking about guys who had big springs last year or in their past years that went on to bigger and better things. So check that out as well. So now, speaking of big springs, now listen, what's today, Thursday? Today is the first day that everybody plays.
Today is the first day today's the first day that the last teams will play their first game. So by the end of today, everybody will have played.
Okay, but aren't there 15 games today?
16, Mike.
16. Ooh, a splitty.
We have two split squads. We have some splitties. And two teams are off.
Okay. Oh, we do have two teams off.
Yes, but
okay,
we have 16
but now everybody
games
has played, I guess. But plenty of games to look at. Now you'll start seeing you know, the stat boxes filling up a little bit for these spring training stats. One guy who's been raking like crazy off the bat is Marcus Semien, who gets talked about a lot, you know, involved in some high-profile trades, trade this offseason, outstanding numbers in the minors, goes up into the majors, you got bit by that, does nothing, but so far 4-for-4 with a walk?
4-for-4 with a walk and two homers.
And two homers, one of them off Bumgarner.
Yeah.
You know, but Mad Bum will be all right.
You know, it's funny that, you know, this... You know, we're talking about a guy who's 4-for-4 with a walk.
Yeah.
That's one good game.
One good game.
During the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, that...
If you have Marcus Semien in your spring training league, you're in first place.
You're the Roto Monster.
That's right,
Two-day Roto Monster. You know, and that's Joe's argument. You know, four at-bats and a walk don't tell you anything.
It's of course not.
Five good plate appearances.
But a month can tell you something.
Exactly, exactly. But, you know, as far as Semien goes, you know, he's an interesting guy. And, again, getting back to Joe's research, you know, Joe wrote a piece over the, you know, over the offseason in his... an awesome Joe Sheehan newsletter. Go out and subscribe to that today.
Please.
Talking about the difficulty Semien had in adjusting from AAA to the majors last year, which was surprising because he was a guy who really, really controlled the strike zone in the minors. And we've always assumed that that was indicative of a skill that you should be able to bring to the majors with you. And it got Joe to thinking that is the jump harder now than it used to be because a guy like Semien is a guy who should be able to make that jump easily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had some theories on that, and then Ben Lindbergh at Grantland wrote a more expansive piece in the last couple of weeks. And Ben's research was that when you adjust for all these various factors, it's harder now than it was in the past few years, but it's not as hard as it's ever been. So
Got it.
Maybe it's a little harder to make the jump now, but 20 years ago, it was just as hard. Mm-hmm. You know, so it fluctuates like everything else. So it's interesting stuff. Again, if you're not a subscriber to the Joe Sheehan newsletter, once you finish with this podcast, go subscribe to that.
Definitely
and,
worth it.
Check out Ben's research on Grantland. So, you know, all of these things boil down to this time-honored argument of, you know, how do we evaluate young players? How do we evaluate small sample sizes? How do we look at what happens, you know, in 100 at-bats in September or 30 or 40 at-bats in March and use all that information on draft day? These are real, real challenges. And sometimes that's where you have to read the tea leaves a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to read what the coaches and the managers are saying. Look at the playing time distributions. Look at where a guy's hitting the lineup. You know, is this guy going out and is he playing on the road team on split squad day? You know, that's kind of
right,
where they send the B guys, right? You really have to learn to read the tea leaves a little bit as much as looking at the data. And the data is valuable, but you have to sort of look at everything. You can't just be a stats guy. You have to be an information guy.
Gotcha. All right, well, speaking of young players, I mentioned...
Person, sorry.
Yeah, person, right. Speaking of young players, I mentioned that Jim Callis did some rankings. I think it got posted either last night or this morning. And today's Thursday, by the way. March 5th. Happy birthday, Tom Degnan, Matt Gould, and Celeste Bell.
And Celeste Bell.
Yeah. Tom Degnan turning 40 today.
Yep. The new 37.
That's right. Exactly. So Jim Callis, who I have no idea how old he is or when his birthday is.
37.
Okay, yeah, there you go. He wrote the top 15 prospects to look at this year for fantasy impact. Some of the guys, he tells you their rankings in the top 100 overall, in parentheses. Some of them are not ranked. Some of them are not ranked because they are ineligible, meaning they've lost rookie status, something like that. The first two guys are Braves. I don't think there's any surprise who number one is. It was Chris Bryant. Solaire, number two.
Cubs.
Did I say Braves? Sorry, Cubs. Bryant and Solaire from the Cubs. Sorry, that was a slip. Ruzny Castillo, who we just mentioned with the oblique earlier on, at number three. Jock Peterson, number four. Dalton Pompey, number five. Now, he has a very cool sounding name, number one. Yeah. I was unaware of the power. I didn't realize he was I knew he was a fast. I just wasn't sure how many homers he could hit.
He's like a little mini Jacoby Ellsbury starter kid.
Yeah, exactly. You know? A starter kid. Perfect. So Callis alluded to he thinks he's a double digit 30 and a double digit homer guy, 30 steal guy.
Yep.
So
yep.
There you go. Ellsbury light without that big peak year with all those crazy homers.
Right.
So hey, 10 homers, 30 steals.
Yep.
Sign me up. Yep. Yasmani Tomas, who's still getting talked about a lot because of the position stuff with his fielding abilities. So that's something you got to keep an eye on. How risky is Tomas to you because of his fielding?
Hugely risky. Yeah. I read a piece somewhere within the last week or 10 days, you know, talking about Cuban players and adjusting their stats. This might have been on Fangraphs, so I apologize if I'm not giving proper credit. But it was basically saying that, you know, again, walk and strikeout rates stabilize somewhat quickly, and those can be a little bit suggestive of what the player might do as he adapts to the majors. Tomas had a worse walk rate and a worse strikeout rate in his last year in Cuban ball than any of the other recent imports. Worse than Abreu, worse than Puig, worse than even Alexei Ramirez, who's a hacker, Deon Viciedo, all those guys. So on that one front alone, you start to look at, you know, is this a guy who's going to hit 30 homers but hit 220? You know, I'm reminded of the conversations I had with people about Abreu last year. You know, I spoke to two different people who work for the White Sox in two different parts of the organization, and they didn't know that I was talking to both of them. And they both said the same.
Aren't you a sneaky little punk?
Well, you know, look, I don't want to work my friends for fantasy information, but...
Well, what are friends for?
These guys are in player valuation.
I worked you over the barrel yesterday for some information.
Yes, you did.
You didn't even know it.
Yes, you did. See what happens when I buy you two Snapples? You know, just, you know, look, they do player evaluation. They're trying to build, get winning players for their team. So we're talking about their team.
I got it.
And they both kind of, even though they came at this from different angles, they both said the same thing. Number one, this guy's power will play anywhere. This guy is a legit Major League power.
And we're talking about Abreu last year before he started playing in the Major League season.
This was more than a year ago.
Got it.
This was during spring training last year.
Okay.
And the other thing they said is he drew a ton of walks. He had great plate discipline in Cuba, great walk and strikeout numbers. But we're not sure how that will translate because the quality of play in Cuba is so uneven and so, you know, ranges so far. So if you're playing in Double A, let's say, you have a pretty good feel that most of those guys are good enough to play in Double A. You know, some are better than others, obviously, but you have a good feel for what that competition's like. They said, you know, in Cuba, the best talent is Major League talent.
Right.
the bottom tier talent are guys who works as baggers in the grocery store, you know, or fishermen during the day or something like that. So the fact that he drew, you know, 90 walks and struck out 40 times, how many of those walks were against pitchers who were worried about their survival and getting back to their day job tomorrow and just rolled the ball up to the plate to not have to face this guy? You know, how much of that is credit to him versus pitchers pitching around him?
Yeah.
And, you know, last year, you know, with the White Sox, his walk and strikeout numbers were You know, so then you look at Tomas, who's got way worse walk and strikeout numbers, and you think, wow, now against major league pitching, they could really pick this guy apart.
Right. Okay.
So he's very risky.
Okay. excellent. Excellent analysis there.
Thanks.
Following Tomas, another import, Hector Oliveira.
Interesting.
Second baseman for Tampa. So go. I didn't have a chance to read everybody's blurb, but please check out this Jim Callis post. It's on the Fantasy homepage. We'll link to it in the blog, and it's, of course, it's on MLB.com. Then Zach Finkelstein's man crush, Steven Sousa. Aaron Sanchez, who I love, and but we have to wait and see what happens. Is he, let me ask you this. Seeing what Betances did last year, do you see that in Sanchez? Because he can strike out the farm and get a lot of innings in the bullpen?
Qualify this by saying, I am not a scout.
Yes.
You know, but I'm an information guy.
Yeah.
And based on what I've read, I think Sanchez ends up in the bullpen.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, you know, they're trying him out as a starter.
But what numbers? I'm saying I'm under the assumption he is too.
Well, I mean, you don't predict Betances numbers for anybody. You know, that's predict those numbers for Aroldis Chapman. You know, that's not fair.
Okay.
You know, but
fine, be that way.
What you're saying is fine. I will. So what you're saying is, can Aaron Sanchez be the breakout elite setup guy this year? He could be the closer. He could be the cold closer. You know, Brett Cecil is a guy who can get righties out, so there's not like they should be afraid to have a lefty closer. And it could also be that they want to gradually build up Sanchez's role, but they were using him in high leverage situations last year right away.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he's going to end up in the bullpen, whether he becomes last year's Betances or this year's Betances or, you know, whatever that may be. You know, he could be a very high-value late-inning reliever.
Okay. Are you targeting him?
I wouldn't say targeting him, but he's a guy that is on my radar. Yeah.
Okay. Micah Johnson rounds out the top 10. And then, like I said, I just didn't have a chance to write down the other four. I could pull it up, but
I'll throw a name at you for a young prospect who we should not get too excited about after two games, but Odubel Herrera, Phillies Rule 5 guy.
Yeah, yeah.
They say has game-breaking speed. You know, they've got a second baseman who's pretty good already in Chase Utley, but he's getting up there in age, might be trade bait, given on how they've started to reshape that franchise. And shortstop looks like it's open right now. So we'll have to see if Herrera can stick at shortstop. So he's a guy to keep an eye on.
And that's an interesting point, too, is look, like when you said read between the tea leaves earlier, look at the bad teams and look at what can open up and who can slide in there.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Herrera, as of today, looks like a nice, sneaky little NL-only keeper.
Yeah.
You know, deep keeper guy.
Okay. Now, of the names I've mentioned, and Syndergaard was on there. I know he was definitely on there. But of the names I've mentioned, non-keeper league, so we're talking about 2015 only, who do you like the best and who would you make sure you get, if anybody?
Well, it's tough, you know. Even if you look at the very, very top of the list, you know, Bryant, for all of his power, has enormous strikeout numbers. And you've got to be concerned about that, even in today's baseball, where you can get away with a strikeout-to-walk rate, you know, much worse than 5 years ago and still be considered a great hitter. I worry about that. Same with Soler. I mean, tremendous power, but I worry about that. You know, I love Rusney Castillo's overall skills, but playing time might be an issue, and there's just, you know, there's not a lot of data to go on with him. It's more of, you know, an impressive small sample size last year, making those, you know, uneasy translations of Cuban stats, scouts, you know, Jock Peterson. So we get to the number four guy on the list.
Yeah.
That's the guy I'd be looking
at. Yeah, and I agree 100,000,000%. Yeah.
Power, speed, safe
playing
time. Not
that Bryant's far behind him.
Right.
As a pick, maybe Bryant's a 1A.
Yeah.
But to me, Jock is one.
You know, he's got an everyday job being handed to him. The Dodgers are working to get Andre Ethier out of town, which just makes him that much more stable.
Yep.
Power speed combo, strikes out a lot but draws a lot of walks.
Who doesn't strike out a lot? I mean, you know, are we getting to the point that we need to stop saying that?
Well, that was my point about Bryant, that, you know, you have to sort of recalibrate your thinking compared to where we were 5 years ago. But that's what makes the case.
I mean, Mike Trout. Struck out.
But that's what makes the case of a guy like Marcus Semien so interesting.
Right, right.
You know, because he walked more than he struck out in his last year in AAA.
Who's he, Joe DiMaggio?
Who's this guy?
Is he Tony Gwynn?
You know, another guy. So again, That's why so many people are so excited about Mookie Betts.
Right.
He draws a ton of walks and does not strike out. So does that indicate a skill that can make the jump and survive at the major league level? Or is it just that with the strike zone in the major leagues being what it is in this day and age, does it not relate anymore? You know, you know what it reminds me of? Remember when Brandon Larsen had that humongous year in AAA?
Yes.
And everybody got so fired up about him.
I named my team the South Larsen Hamptonians.
I know. That's why I brought him up. But the reason I bring up Brandon Larsen a lot is not to pick on you, even though it's fun.
No, that's fun.
Is that when you're 28 years old and playing your fourth year in AAA, you're supposed to hit 35 homers.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
So, again, you have to worry about, is that a relatable piece of information that tells you something about the player as he moves to the major leagues? And and that's why I bring that up now. Is a great walk to strikeout rate really a tell like it used to be because of the differences in the strike zone now at the major league level?
And I mean, I'll take even further back, Brad Wilkerson. I remember we used to talk about him because he would strike out 100 times, but he would walk 100 times.
Yeah.
So you're like, all right, you know, Adam Dunn would strike out 200 times and walk 100.
Yeah.
But Wilkerson, I mean, he was even Steven because he walked like crazy, but he struck out enough to hit the triple digits.
And we talked about that a lot. You know, Jim Thome to me was the poster child for that. He would strike out 160 or 170 times and draw like 120 walks.
Yeah, right.
And I, you know, the point I would always bring up back then is that you have to make a distinction between a guy who strikes out a lot because he's not a good hitter versus a guy like Thome who strikes out a lot as a result of his approach, which is see a lot of pitches, and when you see something you can hit, take the biggest possible swing at it that you can possibly take. That's going to lead to more strikeouts, but that's what made him a 35 or 40-plus home run guy and someday a Hall of Famer.
Right.
So when you look at Bryant, are the 180 strikeouts that he had last year overall, is that reflective of a problem of his approach or a problem of his skill? You know, that's where you have to trust the scouts who say this guy will hit.
Right. And, you know, Mike Trout struck out 184 times last year.
Yeah, just and he's pretty good.
Right. And, I mean, but he had 287, you know, and I mean, and I think, and we talked about this.
287 is the new 310.
Right. So we talked about my point exactly that, you know, batting average has become more important again. You know, people, I mean, think about it. In Tout Wars, batting average was eliminated, right, as a stat, and it changed to OBP.
You down with OBP?
Was that that's what they changed it to, right?
Yep.
OBP. So it was, and this is just 2 years ago. I think that might have been a mistake. I don't know. Because batting average is really back in vogue because everybody strikes out.
Yeah, and you know, when I'm sort of talking with people now leading up to the draft this year, and I did the same thing last year, my approach in the past was, you know, the sort of 75-75, three different hitters, you know, the balanced approach.
Yep.
With my early picks this year, I'm getting as many power hitters as I can get, protecting my batting average as much as possible. And if that means going outfielder, outfield, first base, or even three straight outfielders, I'm much more willing to do that today than I would have been 5 years ago because I am so desperately interested in getting power. Think about when we were kids, like how many guys would hit 30 home runs in a year.
Yeah.
I think something like 13 players hit 30 home runs last year, an incredibly small number.
Yeah.
Nelson Cruz was the only guy to crack 40. Someone in sponsorship asked me to do some research the other day of multi-homer games over the years because they're pitching a business partner. There were like 185 multi-homer games in the majors last year, you know, a guy with two or more homers. 5 years ago, there were like 300.
Wow.
People just, you know, it's not that it's bad, but the game is changing very rapidly, and even if you're thinking about what the offensive environment was 5 years ago, you're hurting yourself. You're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, so and we're doing a digital. So the past couple of years, we've contributed to a paper magazine for fantasy from the league. This year, it's digital. I believe it's digital only.
Ooh, Nelly.
You know, that's the thing we were doing with
the thing. With the thing,
the survey.
Don't,
you know, the thing with the guy. The guy with the thing.
Right.
But anyway, one of the questions was, and I won't give you the answers necessarily, but one of the questions was, and it's me, Corey, Zinke, and Finkelstein.
Z Fink.
So those are the four horsemen of this digital season preview for fantasy coming out. And one of the questions was, because of the, you know, drop in power overall in baseball, are you targeting it more heavy or more early, whatever, however you want to explain it? And, you know, I think we all kind of stayed the course. But one example I threw out, I don't even know if I've made the magazine because of the word count or whatever, but I said, you know what?
How dare they edit you?
Exactly, right? Who are you to cut my word count? And it's too bad because I told my story of the worst decision I ever made in fantasy, and it didn't make it.
All right, so we can tell that on the show.
We can tell that. Okay. But anyway, so real quick with this. I said maybe instead of chasing speed late in the draft, I'll chase just some pop. So instead of a Eric Ibar, I'll take a Steve Pierce.
Yep.
I just picked two random guys that are total opposites and went with it. You know, it has nothing to mean. It doesn't mean I think Pierce is going to hit 30 homers or I think Ibar is going to steal 30 bases. But it was a skill set that I said, okay, maybe I'll lean that and I'll worry about speed on the wire instead of worrying about pop on the wire as much this year. And just, you know, quote unquote, guarantee myself as many homers as possible.
Yeah, and look, that's not to say that, you know, you're going to take Chris Carter in the first round.
No, of course not.
But, you know, are you going to take Chris Carter in the 7th or 8th round where, you know, in the past a guy like that would go in the 12th or 14th round?
Especially if that position is getting gobbled up early because those guys tend to hit homers.
But that's my point. I'm less concerned about position scarcity than I am about category scarcity, and I'm more concerned about the home run category and related stats than any other thing.
Right, but isn't that one and the same at that position? Won't first baseman be cut? Won't be the tendency for most first basemen hit for power lead them to go
sure,
a little
presumably.
Higher?
There'll
be runs
but
on
I
first
think,
baseman.
For example, you know,
I'm just assuming.
You know, take a guy like you know, Kang, the Korean guy in Pittsburgh. If he plays whatever he produces, he's expected to
he's
be
homer,
a
homer, by the way.
He's
so
a power hitter.
He's leading the league in he's second to Simeon in homers in spring training.
He's expected to be a power hitter. So are you going to take a shot on a guy like him over a guy like Ibar? That's what I'm talking about. Apples to apples at the position, you're going to emphasize the guy with the greater pop, whereas 5 years ago you'd say, I want a five-category player starting out.
Right.
Now I'm like, I want a guy who gives me the home run category and as much of the other stuff as possible, but I'm not worried about 20-20. I'd much rather have 30-7, you know?
Yeah. So looking at our player preview, I just pulled up first base. Goldschmidt, Cabrera, Abreu. There are guys, I don't know if some of these guys actually qualify. I don't know what they use to...
10-game minimum.
10-game? Okay, so that's why Bautista's here. Obviously, E5, Rizzo, Posey.
Rizzo!
Pools.
I don't need to talk to
Freeman,
you.
Freeman, Lucroy, McCann, Adrian Gonzalez, Prince Fielder, V-Mart, Votto. You see my point?
Yeah, like, they're there for power.
Everybody I've named can hit for homers. I mean,
sure.
And then you got Brandon Moss, you know, Matt Adams.
Right.
Brandon Belt.
But again,
LaRoche,
my point
Duda.
Is when you're talking, that's how major league teams distribute their talent.
Right.
They take the
course.
Guys who can hit but can't
right.
run
and
put them at first base. Look,
right.
we get that.
We get it.
But I'm talking about when you're making tactical decisions in the draft of, all right, I need a second baseman, I'm looking at who's the second baseman who can bop. So, for example, I'm going for Neil Walker this year,
right?
Or you know, who surprised everybody with the power outburst last year. I don't think he'll repeat 23 homers again, but I'd rather have 18 homers and 5 steals from my second baseman than 12-12.
Right, gotcha. Okay. Well done.
Thanks.
Should we get to some questions?
Let's.
Okay, so here are some Twitter questions. We have about 12.
Oh, before you do that, though.
Yes.
You said the worst decision you ever made.
Oh, yeah. So, well, because one of the questions was...
Because I've made some bad, bad decisions in my life.
One of the questions was, what's the worst trade you ever made?
Yeah.
And my response was, I don't think I've ever made a bad trade.
Oh, you have.
But I've... No, because... Well, somebody always says, don't confuse the outcome with the decision. So you might want to shut up.
That's fair. Joe Sheehan says that. Tell him to shut up.
When you subscribe to Sheehan's newsletter, tell him I said to shut up. when you do the little note thing on PayPal. But I said seriously, I mean, I don't remember bad trades. I don't remember good ones either. I really don't. I know I've made a couple of very good ones that helped me, but...
Really? I remember the bad ones before I remember the good ones.
I just don't. I don't know why. I move on. I'm like Mariano Rivera. I blow a save, I move on.
There you go.
All right? But I remember a decision I made. I've made some unlucky trades. So, for instance, I traded in AL Tout Wars, I traded Verlander for Torii Hunter straight up.
I remember that one.
And then a week later, Torii Hunter ran to a wall and missed a month. Now, Verlander went up. You know, I got the majority of Verlander's stats because it was a deadline deal. But if Torii Hunter was having a great year, plays for that month, that trade's a win-win for both sides.
Yeah, and you...
It's just unlucky.
And just to tell part of your story for you, that was the year you missed winning Tout Wars by one home run.
Yeah.
So when you say, oh, Torii Hunter for a month... can lose your league by a steal, by an RBI, by one home run.
Yeah.
So a month of Torii Hunter versus a month of a replacement player is probably one or two home runs.
Yeah. I had no need for Verlander. My pitching was rock stars.
Insane.
Because I hit on every pitcher I drafted that I didn't need Verlander. And like you said, I would have won if I had that offense. And I got unlucky. That's not a bad trade.
Yeah.
He was doing great, and he ran to a wall. Another year in tout, I traded for Carlos Quentin, and I started moving up. I was making a real big run. That was the year that Sam Walker won, and he admitted.
2006, I think.
Yeah, he admitted later on. It was right around there. He admitted later on that he was sweating bullets. He thought I was coming hard. Carlos Quentin knocks his wrist on his bat in the batter's box and breaks his wrist.
Yeah.
And he was the centerpiece to my run.
And that was the year that Quentin, I remember that injury, he was in the MVP discussion when that happened.
Yes, exactly.
That's how big a year he was having, 36 dingers.
So, I mean, I traded for Quentin. Yeah. And he, the freaky, so I don't think I've ever made, yeah, of course I made trades that I've come out on the downside on. But I don't consider them bad. Now, I made a bad decision once. The worst decision I ever
eating
made.
Eating a tuna sandwich you found on the subway?
Yeah, no, thank you, Rubble. It was an AL only, my AL only keeper league auction that I used to be in. I was in it for 13, 14 years. And I had my four keepers locked. You keep five at their salary. And it came down to Seth McClung or the former Fausto Carmona. And at the time, I was like, I just really need somebody that's going to get some saves. It's just so hard to get. It's just so hard to get saves on draft day. They are so overpriced, the closers on draft day, because there's 60 guys off the board. Think about that.
Yep.
So the inflation is just, I just can't deal with it. So I'm just gonna say that McClung is gonna get those saves, and I'm gonna take my chances. McClung pitches 12 innings the whole year, zero saves. My gut all along said take Carmona, and I chased the saves. Carmona almost won the Cy Young Award, and I think I came in second that year. Wow. If I had Carmona, there is zero doubt I win that league. Zero. And I came in second.
See, I never remember those kind of keeper decisions. I remember the bad trades. And my worst ever fantasy baseball trade was almost my first one because I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
So this was in 88 or 89. You know, I was in college. Never mind texting guys or making trade offers over the commissioner tool online. Mm-hmm. We would write letters to make trade offers.
Snail mail.
Because I was a college student, I couldn't afford to use the payphone in the dorm. That's how long ago this was, and that's how poor I was. So anyway.
Eat or make a phone call and get a trade.
I'll never forget this. A guy named Mark Fippard, his team was called America's Team. He was from, New Hampshire. It was all, white guys with names like John Baker and stuff like that. He writes me a letter with a trade offer. I see you could use some starting pitching help. You're probably going to be, trying to improve your team, blah, blah, blah. It was my first year in the league. I'll give you Bryn Smith for a prospect. I don't know, Larry Walker.
Mm.
So I didn't know anything about prospects when I was 19 years old. I mean, it's not like today where you can just go on, read Jim Kallas' top 5,000 list and know who these guys are, you know? I didn't even know who Larry Walker was. Okay, this was, you look it up in 1989, I think he had 26 at-bats for the Expos that year.
Right. He wasn't even a Rocky yet, right?
He was a nobody. Right. I mean, to a 19-year-old kid in college in North Carolina, he was nothing. And the other thing I didn't understand, not only did I not know what I was giving away, I really didn't understand how contract status has worked in that league. Mm-hmm. Bryn Smith was in the last year of his contract, and he was like a journeyman, middle-of-the-rotation starter. Mm-hmm. Larry Walker was in the first year of his rookie contract.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we did the salary structure there, probably I was trading 7 years of Larry Walker for a couple months of Bryn Smith.
Wow. It's and John Smoltz for Doyle Alexander.
It was Bagwell for Anderson.
Yeah, and Bagwell for LA. There you go.
It took me a long time to get good in that league, but that was that was my first ever trade.
That's wild.
And it was my worst trade, and I'll never forget it.
That's wild stuff. All right, memory lane.
Yep, Larry Walker.
All right, let's do some Twitter questions
but
here.
But I ruined the guy in another day.
A little bit of, there you go. A little bit of a lightning round. We'll get them all in because we have some time. All right, this is from DClim16, at DClim16. Keep three, Freeman, Donaldson, Sale, Cole. Points league, head-to-head, pitching and offense points are even weight.
I think you got to drop Cole. As much as I love his upside this year, you're not going to keep him over Chris Sale. And Freeman and Donaldson give you corner power. Freeman's not a huge power hitter, but 300 with 20 homers even, you got to keep that over Cole.
Okay, I agree. By the way, Donaldson drives a Porsche. And he has Alabama plates, BOR 20. Bring over Reen. That's his nickname. Bring over Reen. He's awesome. A great guy. Yeah, it was cool. Car was cool. And it was just really funny that his license plate was that.
Great. Why don't you give his social security number on your next time, too?
Whatever. It doesn't matter. At fantasy, at F Baseball Guru.
Really? So, yeah, and yet he's asking us.
Yeah, I'm flattered. should I trade Joey Votto and Matt Cain for Mad Bum? 10-team head-to-head non-keeper.
10-team league, I'm keeping the bat over the arm. I understand the appeal
Absolutely
here.
Absolutely agree.
It was only a year ago that Votto hit, 300 with 27 homers or something? No way I'm doing this deal.
No, me neither.
And that's not even to say Matt Cain could be a good bounce-back candidate.
So. I mean, he's healthy right now, correct?
Yeah.
I believe if he hasn't pitched already, he's pitching soon, I believe. At Jimmy Harity, Wilson Ramos or Darnell for this year?
This is a tough one. Travis Darnot really got it together after coming back from his exile to Las Vegas, mm-hmm. which sounds kind of funny.
Yeah,
exiling you to Las Vegas. Really hit well, controlled the strikes a lot better. You know, Wilson Ramos is a guy who we always think one of these days is going to hit 25 or 30 homers, but mm-hmm. he's always hurt. I'm really a big Ramos fan, but I think the argument for Darnot is probably a little bit more rational.
Okay, so you would, if you were faced with this actual decision, you would go?
Probably keep Darnot, but I don't think you can go wrong with either guy. There's a lot of upside to both of them.
So Darnot's projections, according to MLB.com.
This is from Jimmy Harity, by the way, since you didn't say. At Jimmy Harity.
That's what I said.
No, you didn't.
At Jimmy Harity. Yes, I did.
Okay.
Anyway. Play it back for me.
Do it live!
Darnot and Ramos ranked back-to-back in the rankings.
There you go.
Darnot projected. Now, these are just projections, so grain of salt. 253, 15 homers, 58 ribbies. Wilson Ramos, 268, 14 homers, 54 ribbies. So
right.
They're the same guy, but the health and the upside, I think Darnot does have a very slight edge. I may man crush it and go Wilson Ramos anyway.
Yeah.
But whatever. If you go Darnot, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
You said it yourself. They're ranked side by side.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
At @U_Neek81. Get it? Unique. Dynasty League. Which side? Ibar, Billy Hamilton, or Lindor, Syndergaard?
You know, I'm going to get shredded for this, and I get it. Long-term value, no question you want Lindor and Syndergaard. Lindor might even play in the majors this year. Syndergaard mm-hmm. could be an ace. But I want to win right now.
Mm.
And if I got a guy who could lead the major leagues in steals and a very solid major league shortstop in Eric Ibar, and I need all that speed, I'm taking the Ibar-Hamilton side. I know it's a dynasty league, but I want to win now.
Mm.
I don't want to wait 2 years or 3 years for Syndergaard to become an ace and Lindor to become an all-star. I want to win right now. I always want to win right now.
All right, fair enough. Now, if you don't think that helps you get you over the top, then you stick with Lindor
right.
and Syndergaard.
Right.
You know, you just got to be realistic. What do we got Ibar projected at?
Same as every year, 280, 8 homers, and 22 steals.
Yep.
It's the same thing he does every single year.
279, 7 homers, 14 steals.
All right, there you go.
At Bocce Greg with 2 G's, pick one keeper for 2015 only. Melanson, Polanco, I'm going to assume that's not Placido, but Gregory, or Alexi Ramirez. Cost is a 15th rounder.
There's a lot to like in all these guys, and I'm very bullish on Polanco this year. I think he might get a little bit of a discount after struggling at points last year,
mm-hmm.
but I got to keep Melanson.
Yeah.
You know, I think worst-case scenario, you're probably ranking him as the number 6 or number 7 closer off
right.
the board.
Right.
And even though he hasn't done it for a full season, to me, he's sort of like the next David Robertson. He's done enough as a setup guy
Absolutely.
That you're assuming he's going to make the adjustment to full-season closer. I think you got to keep Melanson.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder in mock drafts and Bocce Greg, take a look at the labor draft, which is not a mock draft, it's an actual draft, and the 4-1-1 mock, when all those results are on the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. But take a look where Polanco and Melanson went. I mean, Melanson obviously did not go in the 15th round in any draft. I wonder where Polanco might have went.
And the funny thing is, in the very, very, very slow 4-1-1 mock draft mm-hmm. that we just completed a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
I drafted Polanco and Alexei Ramirez.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite sure that I got both of them after Melanson was off the board.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure you're right. At Wib D. Griffin.
WIBDGRFN.
I just like pronouncing it.
William B. William, I don't know.
No. Anyway, need to keep 5 of these in a 5x5 roto 10-team mixed. So 5 of these in a 5x5 10-team mixed. Kershaw, Gomez, Abreu, Adam Jones, Beltre, Dickerson, Altuve, Puig. Wow.
Oh, I assume you're coming off a winning league,
wow.
a winning season. These are all essentially first and second round players, with the exception of Corey Dickerson, just
right.
because he's unproven. So he's definitely out. You know, Beltre with the power decline last year, as good as he was with the batting average, the power decline, the age, I think you probably have to throw him out.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to Adam Jones versus Puig for me. You know, Jones is a sort of established 30-homer, 90-plus RBI guy, and Puig has maybe even viewed as a little bit of a disappointment in some people's eyes, you know, after 16 homers and I think 11 steals last year. The head says Jones, the heart says Puig. I think Kershaw, Gomez, Abreu, and Altuve are slam dunks.
Yep.
It's tough to give up the power and the consistency of Jones. Knowing what we know about strikeouts and walks today, the guy had 131-19 strikeout to walk rate last year. I mean, that's unbelievable. I just, rationally, I think Jones and Beltre over Puig, but emotionally, I don't want to let go of what Puig might do.
Well, and full disclosure, who you picked for your guy that won't get drafted in the first round, who will be a first-round pick?
Puig.
All right. Sure.
Listen, here's the thing. I remember in my NL-only keeper league, the league where I traded Bryn Smith for Larry Walker, I learned a very valuable lesson from that. It's nice to be too early on, guys.
Yes.
You don't want to be too late.
Yep.
And I had Adrian Beltre in that league. It was an NL-only keeper league. Mm-hmm. I drafted Beltre as a rookie, picked him up as a free agent, 50 cents. We use cents instead of dollars. That's how impoverished of college kids we were. But basically 50 cents with $5. And you would raise a guy. You got him for 2 years at the original salary. Then in the third year, you could either keep him for one more year at that salary or raise him 5 years a year going forward. So it was 5-5-5, and then you lose him, or 5-5-10-15-20-25-30. I had Adrian Beltre for maybe 6 years in that league, 5-5-10-15-20-25. And then by the time he got to be a 30, he was like, those were the years he'd hit 257 with 19 homers.
Right.
But he was Adrian Beltre. He was going to be this amazing player. I let go of him, and he hit 48 homers that year. Swear to God.
I believe you.
The first year anybody in that league other than me had Adrian Beltre, he hit 48 homers.
In my AL, you know this, in my AL league, you know how many times and years I had Chris Davis?
All the years, I know.
Except the ones where he was a monster.
You were like, I love his line drive rate. I want him.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I had this guy. I traded for him 2 separate years. I had him for 3 years as a keeper in an AL only auction keeper. And I mean, I was like, it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. I give up. Boom.
Right? You don't understand. You do understand. What did it feel like in a keeper league, an unmixed keeper league?
Yeah.
To watch the guy who was on your team last year hit 325 with 48 home runs, it was almost like literally he had never been on any other team in that league.
Right.
I drafted him before he was a major leaguer and kept him at that 5-5-10-15-20 salary. It's basically like, I'm trying to think of a metaphor that I can use and not sound too tactless. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, you date the ugly duckling in high school because you met her, like, you know, in you know, science class, and she dumps you and then comes to school the next day, you know.
Right.
What's that Freddie Prinze movie? She, like, takes the, you know, the girl
she's
who's
all
the painter.
Yeah.
Right. She comes to school the next day. She's the most beautiful girl in school. And you're like, what happened?
The lovely Rachel Lee Cook.
Yes.
Very nice.
Lovely is correct. That's why I want to keep Puig. Rationally, I know that's not the right decision. I want Puig. I don't want to be too late when he wins a batting title and goes 30.
We're going Puig. Kershaw, Gomez, Abreu, Altuve, Puig. So it is said.
Got to have fun.
Got to have a little fun. At Whitey Ball 25, 12-team head-to-head 300 cap. Need to keep two of these. Nelson Cruz at 19, Lance Lynn at 6, Rue at 6, McHugh at 5, Sonny Gray at 12, James Paxton at 6.
To me, the one slam dunk is Nelson Cruz.
Absolutely.
I don't care about the ballpark. I don't care about
discount.
The regression. If he hits 257 with 28 homers this year, you still want him for $19.
Yep, absolutely.
I'm keeping Rue as the other guy for $6. I know he had a little shoulder soreness at the end of last year, but assuming he's healthy, his numbers are as any good as any starter on this list, and it's a really nice price. I like Gray a lot, even at 12. I like Lance Lynn at 6. But I like Rue at 6. He gives me the best of everything.
Okay.
Price and performance.
I would take a little bit closer look at Sonny, but I don't have a problem with Rue. I really can't.
I mean,
$6. $6 is a legitimate difference.
For half the price,
Rue
is more than half the pitch.
You're right. At VJD Diego, 12-team keeper league, pick 2 to keep. Hosmer, Carlos Santana, Ruzny Castillo, coming up a lot. today. Mookie Betts coming up a lot today.
Oh, I know. Can I make this call on March 25th? I definitely want Carlos Santana. I think, you know, he's sort of like, just like we were talking about Beltre. One of these years, he's going to hit 275 with 35 homers. Mm-hmm. And even though he's not catcher eligible anymore, he's third base eligible.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm keeping Carlos Santana. I really want to keep Castillo or Betts. I just want to know which one of them is going to play.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep whichever one of those two guys looks like he's going to play.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully VJ DiDiego can hang in there.
Yeah.
But if he can't, if his keeper list is due at 5 p.m. today, what are you doing?
Castillo, just based on what we know today.
Even one of them.
And look, that's not to say I'm giving up on Hosmer, who's very young and has shown flashes, but 12-team keeper pick two,
right. No, he's
got to go.
Right. At LA underscore Frankie. Frankie does Hollywood.
There you go. Okay. LA underscore Frankie. He did Hollywood.
Yep. In a head-to-head points league, who is the final keeper? Kinsler, Longoria, or Pence? Already keeping Goldie, Springer, Kershaw, Strasburg.
Wow. There are arguments to be made for all these guys. Kinsler, he's been healthy the last couple of years, five-category player at the middle infield. Pence, super ultra-consistent player. Mm-hmm. You know what you're going to get. This expression I use is a lot. The shape of his value may change, but the value is always there. Some years it's more homers. Right. Some years it's more steals. I'm keeping Longoria. Even in a bad year last year, he had 22 homers and 91 RBIs. Right. You know, he's still in his prime. You know, he's 29 years old. He's a guy who hasn't had any health concerns for the last couple of years. If last year is his floor, I think he could still do 30 and 100, and I really want to gamble on that power upside.
Yep, no, I agree. And, I mean, that's nice. To put Goldie with a bounce back of Longoria would be sweet.
Yeah, and Springer.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit of strike zone discipline. Springer could hit 35 dingers this year. I mean, this is an elite prospect from UConn, Husky.
There you go. Love it. At Effin Stephen. Or Stefan, or at F and Stefan. I'm going to say it's
Stefan.
Stefan, I like that too. 10-team head-to-head keeper, need to throw back two. Tulo, Springer, Harper, Strasburg, Braun, Donaldson.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Throw back two.
So keep three.
Right.
All right, so I'm cutting Braun. I'm cutting Braun.
No, you keep four. There's
need to,
six
one,
guys
One, two,
here.
Three, four. Okay, so I'm cutting. So I'm keeping four, cutting two.
Yep.
I'm cutting Braun. Again, not because I don't think he can bounce back, but there's so much risk with him, and I think all these guys are borderline elite players, if not elite. So,
but even with Tulo?
I'm cutting Braun, but with no malice. Okay?
Okay, right.
I'm keeping Tulo.
Okay. I'm just saying everything you said about Braun could apply to Tulo. I'm just saying.
But it's a very different kind of thing to me.
I'm just saying. You know you're keeping Donaldson, right?
Wow.
Well, I mean, like, isn't he a first-rounder?
Donaldson's not a first rounder. Maybe a second rounder. I don't think Donaldson's a first rounder.
I thought he was going late.
Harper's arguably a first. Springer's obviously arguably a second. Strasburg's arguably a second. To me, it's Braun and flip a coin. I mean, honestly, I might cut loose Harper, to be honest with you. Springer versus Harper, who do you keep? You know, Harper hasn't stayed healthy for a full season. It hasn't had that 30-homer, 20-steal season people think he can.
All right, so somebody reached on Donaldson in a draft, and I thought that was a ranking.
No, he's not a first
mistake
round.
On that. No, he's not. You're right.
Honestly, you can make arguments for any of these guys except for Braun.
Okay.
So I don't mind, you know, this is, you know, not to punt the question a little bit or to be, you know, disingenuous. This is a case where you pick up the phone and talk with your friends.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on? Who are you keeping? Who are your tough choices? And try and get a feel for, hey, you know what? There are going to be a lot of outfielders in the draft. Maybe I can let go of Harper. Or everybody's keeping starters. I better hang on to Strasburg.
Right.
You know, try and get a feel for what other people are doing. And think about it from the standpoint of, if I cut this guy, is he the first guy I can get back? Then you probably let him go.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. It is a tough one.
Wow.
Right. And that's the biggest thing. Where am I picking in the first round? Do I have the number one? Do I have the number two, number three pick? I'm cutting two guys. If I have the number two pick, I'm guaranteed one of these guys back.
Yeah, exactly.
If not a better player.
Right.
But I'm guaranteed. So you have to take that in consideration too. Now, if you pick 10th, well, pretty decent chance you're not going to get one of these guys back, but that's okay too.
You're getting someone else's good cut.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Two more to go, and then we'll wrap this puppy up. At Craig BRV. First pick in a 10-team draft, post keepers, kind of like what we were just talking about a little bit. Adrian Gonzalez, Braun, or Beltre?
Wow.
Two guys that we cut in Beltre and Braun from previous questions. Craig has Rizzo, Donaldson, Cargo, and Hanley already.
And again, you know, a couple of years ago, I might have said keep Braun because you don't want to lock up your corner this early. I just want the best hitter.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if that means locking up my corner. And as much as I think Adrian Gonzalez may be overrated at times, you know he's a 25-100 guy. Yeah. You know, so it's his power upside versus Beltre with the ballpark and the batting average and maybe some expectation of bounce back, but the risk is he ages out. You've got first and third covered. It's so – you can't go wrong with any of these guys. I'd probably just keep Agons because I think he's got the best – most assured power upside.
And I think if you're going to go a little bit for the riskier, I may go Braun. I'm feeling Braun this year. I'm feeling it. I'm not disagreeing with you at the same time. And I know you said it was no malice, but I think it's, I don't know, it's tough.
I mean, look, Braun, this
Braun is the kind of guy that could...
Think about it this
let
way.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you a quick question, though.
You go.
Is Braun the kind of guy that can help you win your league, but not the kind of guy that can make you lose it?
Well, I think he is one of those high variance players that, mm-hmm. you know, look, in NFBC last year, I took him in the first round.
Well, yeah. Well, but this is and not, now you've that's got not a, what this is.
But
though.
You get my point. He's I one of those high risk, high reward players that if the thumb is healthy, he's capable of being a first round
but
player.
But he's not associated with that risk anymore. That risk is a year removed.
Is he?
Right here in this question, he's a fifth round pick.
Right, yeah, but you know, Adrian Gonzalez is off the board by the fifth round.
Mm-hmm. I'm not
Adrian
saying that
Beltre's off the board
I'm
by the fifth
round. I'm not saying it's a no-brainer.
Yes, at this cost, the risk is built in,
mm-hmm.
built into the price. But you've got two players who are less risky and arguable talent and arguable upside. It's hard to make. I see where you're getting at, but I want if you have the choice of more upside without the risk, why would you take the risk? You know what I mean? You're already taking the risk with cargo.
And I was just going to say, you know what? Braun cargo in my outfield doesn't really make me feel comfortable.
And listen,
makes me excited, but not comfortable.
And this must be said too. Hanley Ramirez, why are we not talking about the risk with this guy?
Well, but he already.
Is he going to play 87 games or 131 games? Is he going to hit 245
or
265?
Well, I'm assuming Craig has to keep Hanley.
Because he's shortstop. Shortstop eligible.
Right. Or he has him on the contract or something like that. Right. One of those two.
Anyway.
All right, last one. At John underscore Chow, or Chu, C-H-O-U. 5x5 Roto, 28-player roster, 350 cap. Please rank. Greinke at 30, Bumgarner 28, Price at 27.
In that opposite order. I go Price, Bumgarner, Greinke, because they're all close enough in my mind that you take the least expensive guy. And again, this must be said. David Price led the major leagues last year with 274 strikeouts.
Crazy.
That's an insane number. So the challenge for chumps like me who slow play starting pitching is where to get strikeouts to keep up with stuff like that. That's a lot of strikeouts. I don't think he'll repeat that number, but it just goes to show how big the cost of strikeouts has gotten and how many you have to get to keep up. So,
Absolutely. Yeah,
I keep Price.
All right. That'll do it for this edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411. Thanks to Corey Stats-Schwartz. You can follow him at Schwartzstop. Thanks to The Goose at ZachMLB. Thanks to Fred Zinke. And please keep reading his stuff and reading the blog. And you can follow Fred on at Fred Zinke MLB. He's been doing chats every Friday, answering hundreds of questions, quite literally over 100. He's gone triple digits back-to-back weeks. Don't forget the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. Don't forget the Twitter machine, at fantasy411. And as always, thank you to those on the other side of the glass. Parting thoughts, Mr. Schwartz.
Right. I hope to see you all Saturday in New Jersey at the Baseball HQ First Pitch Forum.
I hope to
any
of you because I won't be in New Jersey.
No autographs, please.
No autographs. Or $5 if you bring your own glossy and Sharpie.
$5 with Sace.
All right, that'll do it for this edition. Thanks again to everyone on the other side of the glass and everyone else. We'll see you. Won't see you next week. We'll see you in 2 weeks on the MLB.com Fantasy 411.